I have started recording.
Hello, folks at home. I just want to address one thing before we get going into the episode. I'm wearing my breathing nose strip today, in case anyone wonders what that is.
All
There's a
right.
little thing there. Basically, it just opens up your nose and helps you breathe better. And I do it because I really like breathing. Like, I really like
Do
breathing.
you?
I'm
I'm a
total
real
fan.
weirdo.
Yeah, so this lets me just breathe a little bit more. I just love air. I just fucking love air. So anyway,
Addict.
I got a little thing to start off with. So I think it was last episode, Drew, you were talking about like how we think about ourselves, in terms of parallel characters in the realm. So in the realm, in the story, in the universe, in
Oh,
the
I like
lore, in the
realm. I
canon.
think we're realm. Yeah.
So I've done a little somewhat of a presentation.
Oh,
I'm
goodness
just going to
me.
find it here. Okay, so this is slide one, right? This is Hamish,
Yes, I
right? So this is the guess who their power player likeness is. Who which character which power player are they like?
I don't quite
What do you mean by
understand the
power player?
question, yeah.
A power player is like a faction leader or a,
Okay, just okay. You
yeah, like a
mean
faction leader.
you mean visually in this picture?
No. As in, this just represents you. There's going to be another
Okay.
picture that goes to the side of you
This is
that
Hamish.
will.
Who is Hamish like?
Yeah, so basically, I've linked you all up to who I think our corresponding faction
Yeah.
leaders are.
Okay.
Right? A faction leader is any group of people. So it could be a Holden, it could be a Avacerella, it could be an Erenwright, it could be, anyone who just basically is in charge of a group
I
of
mean, I'm going
people.
to stick with Fred Johnson.
Yeah, I mean you'll put me into Fred Johnson, so All right. Da, da,
I've not
da,
really thought enough about it to be.
da. Drum roll.
Go on then.
Okay. Oh, it is Fred Johnson. Okay. All
Yay!
right. It's an easy one. All right.
Okay.
Okay. Next one is let's see. All right. This is, I know this is the clunkiest way imaginable to do
Oh,
it.
it's
Right.
great.
It's
Perfect.
perfect for this show. Right. Drew.
That is me.
Who?
Have you sawn my head off and exposed my brain?
Your head is cropped off the top of that photograph, so I needed something. I could have given you a hat in hindsight, now thinking about it.
Just having a brain exposed was a wee bit weird.
But it looks like Hamish
Holding your
is like
brain, yeah.
holding your brain. It's like
Holding my brain.
holding your brain.
Okay, in terms of who I would want to be, I kind of want to be Anderson Dawes. I really admire Anderson Yeah, I Dawes. think everybody wants to be Anderson. But I think I am Miller, like with all his sort of flaws and failings. Not like I want to be the main character, but like his flaws, I think his flaws are my flaws to a large extent.
Well, I would
See,
say that.
I'd have went more with Miller for me as well.
Well, I would say that Miller isn't necessarily a faction leader,
Oh,
though.
that's
This is the
true.
sort of
No, that
power
is fair. Yeah,
player.
unless he's a faction of one. Okay, faction leaders. Again, love to be Avacerella, but I don't think I am.
You're not, I can tell you that one out straight up. Because I think Avacerella tolerates more bullshit than you would tolerate. Same thing with like Fred Johnson. Like the reason, like it's obvious, like we talked about it with Hamish, but Fred Johnson is both like he's ideologically motivated, but he is also very a lot of his like emotions and personal anger is sort of tied up in the goals that he wants to accomplish, right? Like it's,
Yes, yeah. No, that's that, yeah, I think I said it last time, but the reason I identify Fred Johnson with Hamish is like very controlled on the surface, like very controlled, but like pure emotion underneath. Like it's just a fucking maelstrom underneath. And like he manages to connect the two, and it like when he throws the dude out of the airlock, it's immediately like, fuck you're going out of the airlock, like aggression, and then back to like, okay, so back to business.
So back to
For me, yeah, I don't Actually,
know. All right,
I'm going to go with Anderson Dawes, actually, for my Drew.
Yep, Miss Anderson Dawes. Hey. No, I think legitimately, you do have an Anderson Dawes, you know, if you were like leading a faction or something like that.
If I had political power, I think I would behave in the way that Dawes does, yeah.
Yeah, like a lot of it is like direct like material conditions. There's like a camaraderie about it.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to know like, you know, he's on the floor, you know, working with with the rest of them. Okay, so final one is me, of course. Which pitch?
Which...
Oh, this one, yeah. This picture of me.
Okay.
So I don't know how I feel about the fact that I've chosen my own, but I feel like just having two...
I chose my own when I said Miller.
I think you'll get this one.
I mean, Holden. I'm going to stick with Holden.
Yeah, Holden seems a good fit.
There's a purity to you that I think Hamish and I lack.
Yeah, I'll go for that. Go for that.
When we're watching you play Deus Ex.
Yeah, for example. Yeah.
I think with only... So I haven't chosen Holden, but I don't necessarily disagree with the kind words that you said about me. But Holden is just... He just feels a little too much action hero for me. Do you know what I mean?
I think you wouldn't be comfortable being that much the center and that responsible. I think you would balk at the responsibility. But I think thrust into that position, you would behave a lot like Holden does.
I think, well, Holden was thrust into that position himself, wasn't it?
Yeah. But he wants it.
Well, I actually chose, and I don't know how much you'll agree or disagree with this, Avicerella.
Yeah,
I'm not sure you're ruthless enough, really.
She's underhanded. And ruthless, and I think you would find that.
Although he is very much a backstabber in games.
Well, look who's talking now. You finally got your revenge.
Unintentional revenge.
I love that thumbnail, by the way. We're talking about the We Were Here video for anybody. Yeah,
knives in the back.
Yeah, just literally somebody with three daggers in there.
I think it's four or five. It's quite a lot.
Oh, this is just like an Alamy stock image or anything. Anyway, I don't know. I did that in like yesterday morning, just when I had a few minutes, and I thought.
I see you and Avicerella a bit, but like, yeah, I don't think you can be that underhanded. Yeah. I think you'd struggle to be that secretive as well.
Possibly. But then I'd have a spy to keep all the secrets for me, wouldn't I?
Like, if you were fucking crap over, you'd tell him about your plans. you do the clever thing where you set him up to reveal the thingy, and then you'd be like, oh, right, I've just set you up to reveal the thingy.
Yeah. Okay. So I know when I was using examples of faction leaders, I used Holden in there, but I think when I was coming up with this, I wasn't considering Holden like a faction leader. You could say it because, like, to be fair, he is the captain of the ship, but he seems like an unwilling captain, right? Like, he seems like a... And also, he doesn't seem like a strong...
leader.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I don't know. I put that together because I was a bit bored. And I like... Also, it's just an excuse to show these pictures.
You know what? Actually, in all... You might not be with me on this, but in all cases, there's a bit of a visual likeness as well. You have the long, narrow face and the pointy chin.
Yeah, I've got the round face with the beard. Like,
yeah, and I've got the look like a recovering drug addict kind of appearance.
I mean, Hamish isn't black, but he is quite stern looking.
He's not
black. we'll have to erase that diversity box. Just like... Actually, you mentioned about... Hang on, I'm just going to take this off. This is actually kind of hot.
Whew, it is.
This junk.
Hey.
You mentioned about...
Excuse me a second, I'm getting a phone call.
Oh.
I don't even know who this number is. Hang on, I'll be as quick as I can.
It's the Emperor.
Hello?
Oh, are we still recording? Is this a bit... Oh.
No idea. They hung up.
Okay. Is that a personal ringtone, or is that just your ringtone for everyone?
It's the ringtone I've got at the moment for everybody. Yeah.
Okay. All right. You mentioned Anderson Dawes throwing the guy out the airlock.
No, Fred Johnson.
Fred Johnson. Who did I say?
Anderson does.
Oh, yeah. Fred Johnson. Sorry. I mean, he has almost thrown Miller out the airlock. So
yeah.
You can see where the...
not personally, the though. I think
also, his name is
Bit of a difference.
Oh, yeah. Doors and corners. I was wondering whether or not that folds in.
I think it's more of a sort of general sci-fi action-y reference, really.
Yeah. Almost feels like... I mean, it's kind of like interesting. I suppose Miller would know on that front about doors and corners.
Fred Johnson throwing the dude out the airlock.
Yes.
Just me, or was that OPA member Scottish?
No, he sounded like he had that sort of
yeah, had the belt loader feel thing.
I would urge you to listen back to that dude's speech, especially towards the end. He sounds distinctly Scottish to me. I would be surprised if he's not a Scottish actor.
Well,
I haven't, but
he looks Scottish.
Oh, he does, yeah.
But he's got that sort of like that. I don't want to say gruffness. That's kind of, I don't want to be like stereotyping. He's got that.
I get that manliness.
Barbarian.
Is that what you're saying, Chris?
Yeah, a little. Well, I mean, if the shoe fits, right? Like. I do wonder why Fred Johnson decided to hold that meeting right next to the airlock.
I think it was just at the docks rather than at the airlock as such.
It was right by the airlock. He was right by the door.
Yeah.
Maybe he planned all along to do it. Maybe that wasn't a spontaneous kind of thing. Maybe that was just like...
Because I think Black Sky are the most radical of the factions. We get that implication. Mm. They're the ones who did the assassination on Abitrala.
Yeah, you had me believing that was an Aaron Wright thing, but now, in hindsight, it makes a lot more sense, but it also kind of felt like so this is a faction that we're introduced to as part of this new series, right? Because usually when there's a new series of a show, there's some new stuff that's introduced, and maybe we're being introduced more to the faction.
They've been mentioned before, but we've not, I don't think we've specifically like met anybody who, yeah.
Oh, okay, all right. So they were the ones that hacked the drones. And it does actually make a lot more sense, because as far as we're concerned, Aaron Wright is completely...
Oh, yeah. I mean, they mentioned it was the Black Sky or whatever they're called in the previous episode as well.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Abisarala found out.
I mean, they still might have been paid by somebody.
Well, I mean, this is conspiracies in TV shows, isn't it? It's like, well, they might have an inside person.
Yeah.
You know, it just does seem like hacking a drone... This is where I'm not sure how the world lines up a little bit, because if you're like hacking a drone, right, if that happened in real life and there was a drone going from one country to another country and then hackers got into it and they did something with it and then changed its trajectory or something, we'd think that was like fucking, that'd be game changing, wouldn't it?
It would also be the kind of thing I don't think we'd hear about. The military would not be keen to tell us that one of their drones was... That it'd just be like, oh, I mean, because missiles miss their targets, you know, all the fucking time. So,
yeah.
I don't think they would, because they wouldn't know, they wouldn't want, you know, say Iran hacked a US drone. They don't want to tell the world that their drones are hackable.
Yeah, exactly.
That would make a lot of sense. Wouldn't the ones that claimed to do it brag about it, though?
Maybe not as well, because better for both sides that it's secret, right?
Yeah, and also, whenever there is some kind of big event like this, a whole bunch of, like, terrorist factions, like, take credit for stuff they didn't do.
Yeah.
Which is, I remember when 9/11 happened and a whole bunch of people were, like, taking credit for it. Yeah, and it's like, it's like, oh, the Tamil Tigers or whatever. It's like...
Women's Institute, they were in there. It was
one of the more ruthless of the OPA factions.
He's American. He's Canadian. He's Canadian.
Oh,
sorry.
Bullshit. He's Scottish.
Well, yeah, but a lot of Canadians have got Scottish heritage.
Yeah. I mean, literally no
Scotia. Oh my God, I just got a still of the OPA people, and they kind of like. They kind of look pretty cool, actually.
One of them's really beautiful.
Yeah, the lady is lovely
she's
looking.
Every time I'm like, she's fucking beautiful. She is.
What faction is she in?
Don't know. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She is very attractive. But they kind of look like cyberpunk people, don't they?
Yeah. I mean,
well, that's an OPA. I was just going to say that's a kind of a belter look, isn't it? To have the sort of punky sort of hairdos and stuff. I mean, even Miller.
And I really like Miller's haircut. But because I suppose like they would have shaved sides because if you're working manual labor, it's just more convenient. Yeah, more practical.
Much as people are against a mullet, like a mullet is a very practical haircut. And that's you know, one step further from a mullet, really.
Yeah, it's just a mullet but cooler. So
extreme mullet.
Yeah. So are these like a collection of the leaders of various factions?
Yeah.
I get that. Yeah, that's what he's
So they all got different And so the most extreme when he throws him out to Yella obviously is a show of strength, right? He's not just doing it because
he's also getting very rowdy and he's got a gun and you know.
Yeah.
I think it's heading off trouble and a show of force. Yeah.
Yeah, a bit of both, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean it's and I think it just sort of like reveals the urgency of the situation. It's like you can't hijack this meeting. This is bigger than all of us.
Yeah, yeah.
I found it interesting that it was the OPA that did it, but it wasn't. You know, it's just one rogue. Are they
well, no, that, that's the point. They're all independent. You know, we keep saying this. There's no one OPA representative. Yeah. You know,
like they don't need to go to like the OPA council to get an okay on something they're planning to do. They just act independently.
Yeah,
yeah. It's just a case of needing 50 people.
Yep.
Given the circumstances, it kind of is interesting how they came to that number. Is that just a safe number or something? Because they did it easily with 25.
Well, they'll know the ship that they're going to take, how many pods they can fit on that ship, and how many people they need to fill those pods.
Yeah. So, and they coughed up. They brought the.
I've got, when it gets to that later, there's a little point that I saw in rewatching that I want to mention, actually.
Hmm. Okay, should we carry on with the other Fred Johnson stuff since we're here? So Fred Johnson. Okay, first of all, it starts off where he's saying, "Look, you haven't called me, you know, new phone, who dis?" and I gotta be honest,
Can I go back just slightly before that? Because we get to meet a new character. We get to meet Kamina Drummer today episode, rather, and she's excellent.
I would say
Fred's sort of second in command, more or less.
Oh yeah, she's cool. I like her. Yeah,
she's excellent.
She's almost. I've got Bobby's my favorite character, and then just slightly below it's Kamina Drama and Amos.
Okay, is she a main character, or do you just like her because she's really pretty?
I no comment.
Well, I mean,
I know we're jumping around, but the bit when they're in the pods going to attack the place. Miller says, "How will we know what's the go signal?" And she says, "That will explode and turn into a door." I love that.
Yeah, it really is just a can strapped to a rocket.
How did you feel about the FedEx logo on them?
Oh yeah, was it actually a FedEx?
That made me laugh the first time. I think that's funny. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. Yeah, because it is. It's just like being let loose in some Amazon packaging or something.
Yeah.
Do you reckon, was that a paid product placement or was that just...
They get paid for it, but that's the kind that I don't mind because it's universe appropriate and it's funny.
I mean, to be fair, fair play to FedEx for making it, having a business that survives this long. I mean, exactly. I guess people's...
Well, that's funny in 2001 A Space Odyssey. They fly... The space plane they take to go up to the moon is Pan Am, which long gone.
I don't know the amount of time we're talking about when we're going from place to place here, right? So I don't really know how long it would be from Eros to Tycho, the Tycho station, because. Yeah, presumably Holden would have gave some sort of update, right? Why didn't he?
Did he touch base with Fred?
Yeah, I'm not sure why, actually. Maybe they didn't want to communicate openly.
But they would have had how
tight? Yeah, they do have tight beam and stuff, don't they? So
yeah, how long would
you pondering?
Why James Holden didn't like relay back to Fred Johnson after what happened on Eros, after they escaped from Eros?
Oh, probably insecure. That's what I would think. He wants to tell him face to face because it's very...
Yeah, there's a lot to tell him that's quite important. Yeah.
Yeah. I do like that meeting when they do tell him face to face. It's you know, the Rossi crew and Miller just... Because Fred Johnson's like disappointed parent. Like,
yeah, but then he backs down once he hears that they were on Eros. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're like, look, this is more important than that. This is what happened. And he's, as soon as he hears it, he's on board. He's like, yeah, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I suppose that's probably the most sensible route. It's kind of interesting. And so is Miller like part of the crew now?
Right now he is, yeah.
Yeah, well, they gave him a room.
Holden says to him, like, don't unpack your stuff.
Yeah.
So he's
which very much first time too, I was like, oh, Miller's gonna die. You don't get a life like that. And
Well, I mean, I'm assuming Miller is one of the ones that just sort of lives throughout the series, but I could be wrong. Poker face that one if you wish. I kind of like the Miller thing where he's like, "Ah, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. He's probably busy counting bolts."
Yeah,
like that's the most obvious like reverse psychology that.
Because he also says he's the big tactical brain or something at one point as well. You're the soldier, aren't you?
Guiding him all the way through, but I mean, Miller's pissed off at this. Miller's fucking pissed off.
Mm. He always is, though.
Yeah. He doesn't have anywhere else to go, right?
He can't really go back to Ceres, can he? Unless he goes back to Anderson Dodds specifically.
Yeah, he's stuck in space. Also, I quite like the bit where Miller was just like, he was floating and he didn't quite know how he was reaching for the boot. Was like, I don't quite know. Because you had Adam Jensen, who is whose real name is Kenzo?
Yes.
Kendo Nagai. Yes.
And he was very like adept at it, wasn't it? He was just because in my mind, I know it's probably not the case. They're in the same room, but it's not, is it?
I always think that's the same room. Yeah, there's no reason to think it necessarily is, but why wouldn't it be?
Yeah, why wouldn't it be the same cabin? Yeah,
yeah. Well,
I'm assuming those are like officers' cabins or something.
Yeah, when Miller crashes to the floor, he's like, I fucking hate space.
Yeah.
Which he says again, of course.
He's said it a few times. Yeah.
So Miller's like, he is the wisecracking one then of the team. They got their wisecracking one. Because they didn't have a wisecracking one before, did they?
Well, they had Shed.
Oh, yeah. They had Shed, didn't they? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, sorry, I don't think of Shed as a member of the proper team because he wasn't on the Ross and Ante, was he, really?
No,
he never set foot on it. He lost his head just before that.
Yeah, in more ways than one.
I don't think of Miller as a wisecracker, though.
Yeah, he's totally a wisecracker.
More of a, like, wry, more sort of, like, detached.
Okay, yeah. Like, not, yeah.
Not like Marvel quippy.
No, not Marvel quippy. More like...
Coffee dude.
More pessimistic, more nihilistic, more
realistic. Yeah. You mean
pessimistic, nihilistic?
But now he's found something to care about, which is I think why he's angry now.
So either nihilistic or not nihilistic. Now that he's found something to care about, how do they know the stealth ship is there?
Good question.
Yeah, good question. Maybe they tracked the driver signature.
It's clearly not a very good stealth ship.
Is it just guarding the base?
They know it's guarding the base somehow, but I can't remember.
Because they got details about that station, didn't they?
No, first of all, they got details about Phoebe.
Phoebe, yeah.
And then they tracked the signal that was getting sent.
Well, we mentioned Phoebe right at the beginning because we we disagreed about this last time because I was adamant that Phoebe was a Earth station.
Mm. Oh, they cleared this up, didn't they?
Well, beginning of the station, they said Phoebe Station was a joint facility run by an Earth Corp.
Yeah, it was Earth. We discussed this last time.
Yeah, well, you said it's owned by Mars, and I checked the
wiki. No, I got it wrong. No, I did. I think I fixed myself there.
I did look it up,
so I was hoping I'd corrected myself.
Wiki said Phoebe's owned by Mars, but then it's the facility they're talking about. So I think maybe Mars owns Phoebe, or Mars has a claim on Phoebe, but the facility there is a joint facility run by an Earth Corp.
Yeah, Protogen. Now,
Protogen, which is the Earth Corp in question, which is Jules Mia Pau. Jules Pierre Mao. Miao Pau. which is the Earth Corp that they're referring to. So they go. Do we want to talk about what Alex when they were on Phoebe Station? They always go for drinks on Phoebe Station, not Phoebe Station, Tycho Station.
Yeah, well, it's got a good bar.
And this is a bit that I thought happened in a previous episode, and I started to talk about it.
You did, yeah.
Amos hires a girl to listen to.
Yeah, who's also very pretty.
She's very pretty. Yeah.
Alex. I like Alex. He's actually one of my favourites, but he never feels particularly conflicted. He feels like a very straightforward character. Like, I like him on, but I also don't. But he's not very. I don't find him very complicated, which is
I think they try and introduce complication with the stuff with his wife, but it's not very interesting complication. And he just he likes flying the ship, and he's like you said, like the peacemaker. He likes to be a family kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. He's and thoughtful and
Yeah, yeah.
Raises another question about the Rosinante is where do they buy these railgun rounds? Because they're super spa. So they've got seven. I think
Tycho fuels them up and.
No, they didn't give them real gun rounds, though. Not real rounds, PDC rounds.
Yeah.
What's PDC?
Point Defense Cannon.
Oh, right. Is that a
one? That's the da-da-da ones, yeah.
Like miniguns that pop out of the side of the ship, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe they'll work it out in the future.
It's interesting to know that the 10,000 rounds is probably quite a good capacity. The Rosinante is going to be pretty well equipped. So 10,000, I'm assuming, is quite a large amount of rounds. But I don't know. How many do you fire? How many do you miss?
They fired nearly 3,000 getting out of the Onager. 2,800, I think he said.
That's quick maths.
So enough for three encounters-ish, give or take?
Yeah. Presumably they can find some kind of, I don't know, like if it's custom rounds, like.
I mean, they'll just be Martian. We don't know whether they're standardized.
Depends where they're made, I'm sure they can find a way. I wouldn't think that's the biggest thing to worry about right this minute, really.
Obviously
they fire a lot more this time round when they have a combat at the station and the ship.
Some nerd who's counted them all, frame by frame. Oh,
but also, they do have, but all it takes is one scene to get clipped out on the cutting room floor, and then you've just lost like 50 rounds. They finally moved over the Americans finally moved over to the metric system with millimeter wrenches.
All right, yeah.
14 millimeter.
That is the belters. We don't know what Earth's using.
Oh, it is, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. But oh no, was it Martian? Well, actually, saying that because when you buy, wrenches and stuff like that, they'll have millimeters and was it 12 inches or quarter inch, 8 inches?
At all for the American market, they'll have inches on. Yeah, but you can definitely buy ones that don't, which are for Europe. Well, the rest of the world's market, basically.
Oh man, I can't remember now because I think everything I've got is. Do you know? I've got to be honest. I just go through the ones. I just go through them. I don't even measure.
Oh, no, yeah.
I just feel like, it looks... So I don't know
if that might fit until you get one that fits.
Yeah, yeah. Because I don't know if... I don't trust... I don't like the shit... Like, I always... I don't like the... is it shearing? Is that what they call when it rounds off the
yes,
screw?
Yes, yeah.
And
I don't... My screwdrivers have only got millimeters.
Okay, yeah.
I've got that are just millimeters, and I've got some that are mixed because of specific. Because I've got like a set that are for specific computing and console devices and stuff. Yeah. And there's a load of stuff in there that fits that wouldn't, if they were metric, they wouldn't fit like certain American consoles or Japanese American consoles. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, loads of my stuff is just hand-me-downs and car boot sale stuff and whatever junk I've got lying around. So I've probably got, I got like a mix of all sorts and stuff where the labels have worn off and all that kind of stuff. There's Naomi and Holden just having a chat. I don't know. It doesn't seem to be about anything interesting other than they seem to be talking like they're an item.
Well, yeah, I think they are. It's fair to say.
Yeah, that's what it's about, really, isn't it? Well, Holden's worried as to how Amos is going to react.
Yeah.
Is the crux of that.
Because I didn't know if it was just a quickie in the airlock or if it was like...
Yeah.
You know, seeds of romance or whatever.
I don't think they really know. There's clearly an affection between them, but I don't think they're 100% clear on what it is.
Yeah. I mean... Sure. Then we've got the Fred Johnson airlock scene. Then we've got, I really liked the bit where Alex and Holden were like preparing, they were doing the stealth maneuvers in the simulator.
Before they revealed that it was a simulator, did you just think the Rotinante's been blown up?
No, I knew it. I kind of felt that it was, a simulator.
Drew's disappeared from the screen completely now.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back to your traditional corner.
Yeah. I didn't. I kind of, when it blew up, I was like, okay, this is some sort of dry run or a dream or a.
I think for a split second, I was like, oh, and I was like, oh.
And also, this is like a moment where we see.
While you're talking about that simulation, can I point something? They talk about the railgun getting them in the simulation. Mm-hmm. But in that simulation, they're side on to the other ship. And then the railgun shoots through them. And it's like, no, the railgun's might have done the nose. How did that happen? Just a little nerdy detail.
Hang on, I'm looking at it now. So they've got the spinny guns.
PDCs.
Right. Yeah. And then it looks like they just blew up from the inside, actually.
Yeah, it looks like a large round goes through the side, straight through the Rocinante from one side to the other.
It looks like an energy round. It doesn't look like a...
Yeah, but that's what the real gun is, like a high-capacity shell.
Energy, yeah.
But...
Well...
Yeah, there are no energy weapons as such.
It doesn't look like a... It could have been a physical item, I guess.
Well, a rail gun would look... Well, in the show, like they make them look... Because a rail gun is a metal, usually projectile.
Electromagnetically fired, yeah.
Yeah, like it's an electromagnetic. It's like a rail of magnets that fires it. So it would have like, I think they're trying to indicate it's got like sparkly electricity, electromagnetic shit going on around it. Mm.
Do they do that with the military, don't they? With tanks and stuff. And also you can go to places that do training and stuff, and you can like learn how to emergency land a 747 or something.
They do what with tanks, sorry?
Oh, like sort of that kind of thing with tanks where they do
simulations.
Like, simulations. So this is Alex getting up to snow. It's the closest thing we've seen so far to a montage, really, isn't it?
Yeah, training montage.
Yeah.
Pop.
Yeah, and I kind of like how they explain it, because it's like if they're too close, the railgun gets them. If they're too far away, the torpedoes get them.
So once the air, Alex comes up with a cleverer plan.
Yeah, and actually, and Miller makes the case that it's like, you know, you've got this hodgepodge of OPA factions that we've seen don't really get on with as you know, in the previous scene here. So Miller kind of, whilst it wasn't really tested in the show, makes a pretty solid point that you kind of need a belter to go down with the belt people.
Keep control of them. And we do see, like,
they call them boss man and stuff. So they,
on the assault, like, they clearly need somebody with a bit of a level head to keep them under control. That's definitely
obviously, because they've murdered most of the scientists. Mind you, they did go mental and make everybody panic. So, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the thing. That's the difference between, you know, like a volunteer, a community army, as it were. Like, you know, like a community guard. Like a hodgepodge militia versus a military, you know, tactical team. Like, if it was Martians, for example, they would go in, they would know exactly what they're doing. You know, they'd have, you know, especially considering that they were using gel rounds, which...
Yeah, well, they didn't know that.
Did you think Water Thief Boy was dead?
Yes. Yeah,
It does look like... Yeah, they deliberately used a red gel round to make it look like he'd been shot in the
head. They do the thing again where... You know, it's a character like going, you know, having a lot of bravado, the young character, a lot of bravado and going into combat situation. The trope is they die first.
Yeah.
They do that and then pull it back, which is fun. I enjoy that.
I like that. I like his character, even though he's kind of like, he's got that.
He's a teenager. He's a teenager. He's great.
Yeah. And like, you know, you look at various guerrilla fighting forces around the world, there's a lot of teenagers in them.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not anything I know I'm particularly knowledgeable about from that level, but it very much rings true to me that it's like, yeah, you're gonna, you know, if you've got his uncle Mateo died, you know, fighting the Martians of sorts. You know, that's gonna be a big driving force
when he gets up off the floor and he's just like, invincible me, like, it's so
Diogo is his name.
Diogo,
that's it. Yeah,
Diogo.
Oh my god, I tell you what though, that bit where he is on the can and they're going through and he goes, stay away from the aqua.
That's such
a flashback moment. It's like, it's just like,
yeah,
that is like, so you know exactly where you know him from, but it makes total sense that's like,
doesn't feel shoehorned, doesn't feel like too much of a coincidence. It just feels natural, and fun.
Yeah, I think that's kind of, and it's just something you say because he wouldn't know Miller's name anyway.
No, he calls him. He just calls him Star Helix or something.
That's kind of, and that's such a teenagery thing. Like, it's kind of So I kind of like that character. I'm glad he survived it.
Diogo's kind of got that going on. He's got a bit of an arc going on, obviously, where he started off being like a sort of silly bugger and then got radicalized by what happened to his uncle a bit and decided to join up the OPA army.
And I'm hoping that he sort of, like, I don't know, develops, you know, as a result of life experience, as is the way with these kind of shows. I hope he doesn't die soon, because I think he has got like lessons to learn, friends to make along the way, all that kind of stuff.
Well, he definitely invites it. Invincible me, you expect him to get shot again right that second.
Well, sometimes you just got to commit, right? You know, sometimes failing to commit is the thing that gets you killed. And sometimes it's committing and overcommitting. Right? And also on the can, Miller losing
his helmet.
Every opportunity to just subtly show you that, like, he's not like Belters. The other Belters are very comfortable in space, like second nature. I love it when they refer to just open space as fresh air. Like, I get that gets me. Miller's a belter, but he's not that kind of belter. He's not a space belter. He's an indoor belter.
He's an indoor guy.
I just noticed something. It's a little bit out of focus, so I'm going to try and find it. But so when Holden puts the cup on his, you know, in the air.
Yeah.
It's got a label on it. Does that label mean anything? Yeah. Oh.
It's the Martian Navy.
Martian Congressional
Republic Navy.
No, Republic Navy, not Royal Navy. No Mars Queen.
No
Mars Other than Queen. Bobby.
Well, there you go. Yeah, that's
the point down when you say that, you know. Oh, perfect. That was perfect. Oh, there's the cup, yeah. MCRN is what it says on it, though, yeah.
Yeah, so they put that on their they bought it on the, you know, off the Amazon website and put that in. He did finish the coffee, right? Because oh my god, you do have it, don't you? Yeah. See, I kind of like that idea. If we ever do merch, we should just like give people a design and then let them put it on their own. Like, because you know, get a sharp, like, yeah, I don't know, cut it out on a piece of paper and then Sharpie over it. Or something, I don't know.
We could do like an SVG stencil that you can cut out.
Yeah,
but ideally, just make your own.
Yeah, yeah, just write spaced virgins on a t-shirt. Everyone will know what you mean.
They'll get it.
They'll get it.
Can we talk about the can blowing up then? Since we're on that vague area. You know how they go, oh, which pod was Miller on, and they look up the manifests?
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
actually,
yeah.
Well, it's Alex who looks up the manifests. Yeah. Do you notice that he dwells on one person for a second?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the guy that he was trying to help in the station, in Tycho Station, who argued with him. So it shows you that he just wants to help and get back at the inners, and so he does, and then pays the price.
On the can that gets blown up. Yeah. That's so. Yeah, it was kind of interesting. Like,
talking about the coffee cup thing. You know how Amos sort of jibes him a bit and says, "Oh, did the Navy not tell you how to store your gear and everything?" Amos actually has a little bit of a wry smile when Holden gives a sort of Star Trek-y let's go sort of comment. I can't remember what it was. Let's burn or something, he says. Something like that.
Air is in the tank.
Or light us up. Light us up. That's it. He goes, light us up. And Amos kind of goes, whatever.
Speaking of that dude, when they were on Tycho. Alex is going like, these dudes, like, if we don't look after them, they're just going to end up on basic assistance with a menial job. And like in social housing, and Amos goes, "Oh yeah, that'd be terrible." Different expectations. Yeah, that's kind of cool.
That's kind of interesting because there is narrative consequences for the can getting blown up.
Yeah, yeah.
Which so it's not just like, oh, you've just lost half of an arbitrary number.
There's more to it. Yeah, they make it matter a little bit. Yeah,
yeah, it's a little bit less like the end of Game of Thrones. It's like, oh my god, we lost like 10,000 people in this battle, but oh, none of the important people were killed. So it's like, you know, narratively doesn't feel consequential. But, you know, and you could argue, yes, they're the perspective characters because they make it to the end, but they don't always make it to the end. It just seems like you're just following arbitrary people that die at random times because I don't know, maybe they have stories to tell or whatever. Anyway,
it's like there's no character introduced who's just throwaway. You know, there's no character where you speak to and learn about who's just thrown away. Well, although a lot of them were meant to be, but they liked them and they kept them going. You know, I think I think he might have been one of the ones that was meant to be a throwaway thing, but they put him into something else later in the show. You know, because a lot of the characters are amalgams of people, you know, various people from the books and things. And you've also got, I forgot his name now. There's another one who's definitely an amalgam, but I can't remember who it is off the top of my head.
What you were just saying about main characters in Simone, I just reminded me of being in history class at school, and we were doing like World War II, as you do a lot. And we just done a like, what did your granddads do in the war kind of thing. We all went round and said what our granddads did in the war. And then a kid next to me goes, it's really weird that all of our granddads survived the war. And I was like, think about what you just fucking said.
Yeah, but mine did the radio. That was his thing.
One of mine was in a tank, and he was their tank was taxed with transporting Robert Maxwell. Is that the right name? The newspaper dude. Yeah, transporting him somewhere important because he's an important person. The tank got shelled, blew up. My granddad's arm was all torn apart, and Maxwell was still there. And they sent a rescue transport, and the rescue transport just picked Maxwell up and then left.
Jeez.
Yeah.
And, wow.
Yep.
Well, did everyone else have to just fend for themselves?
I think they got a reflective trek across the desert, and then they got a whatever later, or yeah.
Oh, Christ. Wow.
My other granddad was in the Navy and basically saw no action, which is, you know, best bet, really. Yeah.
Best bet, yeah. I mean, my granddad did his national service basically after the war had ended, so his was pretty easy.
My granddad was after, yeah, he was in Sudan, I think it was.
My Navy granddad, he loved the Navy. And when the war ended, he joined the Merchant Navy, and he eventually had to give it up because he got arthritis, and he hated not being at sea. He just loved the sea.
Oh, really? What did you like about it?
He didn't talk. He's one of those war. He didn't have stories. He didn't talk about it. He was very emotionally shut off. Yeah, so I don't really know.
Yeah, yeah. I know someone. We used to work with someone that just wouldn't shut up about it. He was the one that saw a Frenchman's head come off.
Oh yeah, no, that's wrong. Yeah.
That was just an accident with the tank. Yeah. That wasn't a war. That was just unfortunate accident.
Yeah, my other granddad had a lot rougher. Yeah, so that happened with the tank, and then he was in D-Day as well.
Oh Christ!
Not on the first day, not on the first wave, but still, like, not, you know, unpleasant.
Mm. Oh wow.
What was my point? Yeah, just, you know, if your granddads didn't survive the war, he wouldn't have grandchildren to be sat here talking about it, would he?
That's it. Survivor bias.
Yeah.
Hashtag never forget.
Unless you're a politician, then just use it and forget about it anyway.
That's it. But
back to the Expanse.
Yeah, that's enough of your anti-fascist action update. I do like to use November as the month to remind people of anti-fascist causes, you know.
Yeah, because all the fucking poppy stuff.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Symbol into a thing that glorifies soldiers and war, as opposed to like remembering war as a tragedy.
Everybody's got to have the biggest one possible now.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they're on the front of their cars and stuff. It's just such a cheapening of it all.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, it's the very definition of virtue signaling, isn't it?
Yeah. Anywho, sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Hang on. I'm sorry. Just one more thing about it is that do you not find it's like when it's, is it July that's the Pride Month and Corporate Pride Month and all the logos are rainbow? And now, November, it's Never Forget Month and all of the British businesses have poppies. Like, it just.
It's all performative, isn't it? It's all just, that's what we're supposed to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, while it's popular, if it becomes unpopular, they'll be on the other side.
Yeah.
One of the things, actually, I really thought was quite well done about the scene where they're approaching the station, is the is how the Rosinante was attached. So they had that. Is it freight, that big freighter? And
the guy Molinari.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, and. And that's so that the cans were coming off of that as well as the Rosinante.
Yeah, the Rosinante is being towed by it. Yeah,
be towed by it, and it's like, whoops! You know, it's like they kick it off the back of the truck
to make it look like they've lost something and they're coming in to collect it, basically.
Yeah, and then they do the we've dropped something, we will pick it up.
That's Kamina. Kamina, you can see why they kept her on, because she just delivers lines so beautiful. Like, she's such a character.
Yeah.
Within two lines, she is just such a strong, you know.
Well, I think one of the first things she says is, should I meet them in the airlock with lots of guns or something? You know? Yeah. Fred says, well, let's try words first.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's like, this is the legal notification. So they're just trying to be like, don't.
It's distraction and cover, basically. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It gives them a legitimate excuse to get closer, like close. It would be suspicious without that them being that close.
Yeah. It's like it's a good example of stealth in space, because they're trying to get the jump on a stealth ship. So yeah. So they're like fly casual, as Han Solo might say, right? and the can just, I don't know, like it does feel kind of real. Like it feels like a little bit like how space has kind of been normalized. We think of space a lot like when we see it as very clinical, right? Like it's very, it loads in properly, and then you've got the airlock and and these are just like, yeah, like big tin cans with string. And
well, it shows you, you know, Belter ingenuity. They'll repurpose things rather than have things custom built and whatnot, which I think is cool.
Well, totally, because of course, if you know, the rarer the resources, the more creative you have to be with using what you've got. So and of course the FedEx is gonna, you know, it's like, well, it's just packaging, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
That's like, wasn't there a guy who like burgled a whole bunch of, no, didn't he mail himself out of prison?
Oh yeah, there was something where somebody mailed themselves out of prison. Yeah, there was also an escaped slave who went on to, he escaped and then went on to write about slavery and become part of the abolitionist movement. He was mailed to freedom. And he was in a, he's called something Box Brown. I can't remember the first name. And
because of the,
he was literally put in a box and transported for like weeks. It took a long time to, you know, because this is the 18 whatevers. Yeah.
How did he deal with the shit?
Henry Box Brown. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, he was also a magician and later as well.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. See, there's a part of me that's like, that I kind of want to go to prison just to see if I could escape.
Oh, that's, have you watched Arrested Development?
No.
You need to watch Arrested Development.
I've seen Prison Break, and that the first season of that was really cool.
No, watch Arrested Development.
Yeah, that went downhill quickly, though, that show. They had a good idea, and they just milked it.
What's the idea?
Into oblivion. Not Prison Break, I mean.
Oh, they did milk it, didn't they?
If you've got to escape from prison every season, it's going to get a bit, you know.
Yeah, I liked the one where they escaped from the normal prison, and I kind of like the one where they escaped from that really brutal Mexican prison.
Yeah.
But everything else was just like, bad guys and dark cars and stuff like that.
I've never actually seen it, but my mum and my sisters loved it because of the hot men.
Yeah,
there's very British cast in that, actually. Both the main guys, the two guys who played the brothers, were both British, even though they were playing Americans. Yeah.
Because they're in the CW DC stuff later on, and I enjoy them in that.
The anyway, CW DC.
We're getting right off topic.
Okay. Here. Yeah.
Get on track while I go for a piss.
Cool.
Space piss.
Space piss.
All right, on you go. I was going to say we find out about Fred Johnson's reality, the reality of Fred Johnson.
The reality of Fred Johnson?
Yeah.
What's the reality of Fred Johnson?
Hang on, let Drew come back from his space piss first.
Oh, okay. One thing I was thinking about...
He sent up his kettle, I think, as he went away.
Space kettle. With the gun that was being shot at them from the stealth
station.
Ship. Oh my god!
Oh, the station,
the stealth ship. When the way that it came out was amazing, because it was like, I know the entirety of its stealth technology isn't that they painted it black, but it definitely like makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah. In space, it would. Yeah, it just sort of rolls over the top of the station.
It just rolls over the top, and it's kind of like.
I like that when they took it down. All the stealth composites and stuff all broke away and everything, and you could see bits underneath and stuff when they were shooting it. That was quite cool.
They shoot at the Guy Molinari or whatever it is, but they take the torpedo out of the air. Oh yeah, Alex shoots the torpedo out of the air, doesn't he?
What torpedo?
They fire a torpedo.
The PDCs shoot.
That's what they're for. Yeah. But it's there isn't the but the other thing is the anti asteroid
cannon
thing. Yeah, that's what takes out the pod.
Ah, right, yeah.
And that's what Alex does is he comes through the station's ring, back up, right next to where the anti rock cannon is, whatever you want to call it. blows that up and then takes it, then comes straight in and takes up the takes on the stealth ship, because he takes all the, and that's what I was just saying, Drew, that it's really cool how he rips all the stealth composite off of it when he's shooting at it and stuff.
But the Ross Nanti kind of gets riddled with a fair amount of holes.
Well, I'm sure
that's why they're wearing the pressure suits.
That's why they enter the air at the ship and wear the pressure suits.
Yeah.
I mean, one gets pretty close to hitting Naomi at one point.
Right through the screen.
You see it.
They do an almost like cartoon expression when that happens as well.
But the thing is, right?
But we also find out that Fred Johnson didn't know at the time that there was that there were belters that had surrendered. That was the point about Fred Johnson. That was the important point of this.
When Avasarela meets Souther in the bar and tries to get him to appreciate whiskey, Souther tells Avasarela that Fred Johnson didn't didn't know they'd surrendered.
So it's a bit of a Jamie Lannister situation there, I guess. You know, where it's
I can't remember what happened with Jamie Lannister, but
Jamie Lannister killed the king because the king was going to order the burning of King's Landing. So it's a bit like, and I always wonder about characters like this, and I think I can kind of empathize with them a little bit, where it's like they don't want to clear their name. Like,
I like that. They just walk away.
I think
trying to clear his name would just be pissing in the wind, and he knows that.
Yeah.
These are the bad guys. Why do I even care? And just goes and joins the good guys.
Yeah, that's. And I think I don't know. Is it the same with Jamie Lannister?
I don't know. I think he just accepts that he's now the Kingslayer, and people have a romanticized view of kings, even when they were murdering the entire population. You know.
Yeah. Well, even now, isn't it?
They are. I mean, they're doing it. They're just doing it in a more indirect way now. I mean, wasn't there a big documentary recently about the two, about Charles and what's his older son called? No, that's the other one, isn't it? William.
No, Henry.
William.
Well, hang on a minute. Which one are you talking about? Because there's William and Harry, the two sons.
No, there's
the
brothers. But no, I'm talking about the king.
Oh, Andrew.
No, the king.
Oh.
Our king.
The king's brother is Andrew.
What?
The king's brother is Prince Andrew.
No, not the king's brother.
I'm
talking about, there was a documentary recently about Charles and William. About all the scams and stuff that they've got going, Harry. All the money they've got. No, William.
Oh, William, okay.
The oldest one. It's William, isn't he?
Yeah.
And Charles is the king. I'm like, I've got that right, haven't I? It's Charles.
Yeah. Charles is the king.
So why are we arguing about that? I'm confused.
Sorry, I thought you said brother.
No. When you said Harry, I said no. The other one, the brother.
I thought you meant brother of Charles.
So anyway, but they're scamming and taking money from things. They've got money, income from stuff that's charities and all sorts. And they got awarded more money and everything. Oh, there was a big you could call it an expose, but
even within myself, I'm anti-monarchist. I think royals, kings, leaders, whatever. They're pieces of shit. They've always been. There was never a time when they weren't pieces of shit.
No, exactly.
Any king that you hear about who did great things, you can admire their personal qualities and admire their accomplishments, but they're still a piece of shit.
Yep.
But nonetheless, I read fantasy books, and there's often a fantasy trope, they're the rightful king, and you want to get, and you get invested. And
But you don't want the rightful king because they just happen to be from the right bloodline. You want the rightful king because they're the good one.
Well, it's both. It's both together.
Yeah, and the story you want that, together.
Yeah.
Well, that's
but there isn't a rightful. There is no real life good king. That's what Drew's just explained.
Yeah.
And it's obvious. They're just
bad ones, and they're ones who accomplish great things and do good things with the resources they have. But they're all fundamentally.
They're all still making. They're all still taking as much as they can out of it at the time.
Yeah. I think
it's the same as billionaires, whitewashing their reputations. It's just charity washing or whatever,
The company gets to a certain size, there's no good company. They're all, we like some of the things that Valve does. They could contribute to Linux projects and stuff, but fundamentally they're out to milk us for every drop of they can get out of us and give us as little as possible in return.
Yeah, well, companies of a certain size are just machines, right? They're just these cogs that are moving.
Well, people think that, but there's always somebody or a few people who know everything that's actually happening. You know, it's not a... You know, it's like that film that Drew put me on it the other night about the banks and stuff, you know?
It's good, yeah. Basically, The Big Short.
Nothing's changed, you know?
Oh, I like The Big Short. It's a good, yeah, that's...
Very good, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I digressed.
Yeah, and also, of course, just a side note on the monarchy thing is that it is literally the class... The class system that is... formalized and
ordained
then...
by God. It's a class system ordained by God, yeah.
Yeah, Jimmy Savile's best friend, ordained by God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look at, yeah, we got that just now with the...
Oh, Christ.
The,
I'm starting to think God's a nonce. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Well, that'll get us cancelled.
I will make this case. From what I understand, when it was happening, this is with the Catholic Church, like the incidence of paedophiles in the Catholic Church was about the same proportionally as incidence of paedophiles in the general population. It's just the problem wasn't the incidence of paedophiles. The problem was they were covering it up.
Yeah.
And also doing it in the first place.
Yeah, of course, but that's like any population. Yeah.
But and also, like, I think a lot of it is...
Didn't Trump appoint a paedophile to his new cabinet as well? Like a known...
I mean, they've all been...
Oh, my God. Okay. The thing that got me, right, I don't know how much closely you were following the election right up to election day, right, but there was this big meme story about this squirrel that got put down. I don't know if you heard about this. Basically, there was this guy, like, he's a TikToker or a YouTuber, and he rescues animals, and one of these animals he rescued was a squirrel. He tried to get it into, like, care or whatever, like, to a sanctuary or whatever. He couldn't find someone that took it, so he adopted it itself. And it's just this charming squirrel that lives with this guy. At some point, the police raided his home. They took the squirrel. The squirrel bit one of the cops. And then they were like, oh, no, we have to test him for rabies. In order to test a squirrel for rabies, you have to kill it.
Yeah.
So there was this big uproar on the local news, as you know what American local news is like. And for some reason, people like Elon Musk and whatever made this into a meme election issue, saying Trump will save the squirrels. I know it doesn't make any sense, right? It doesn't make any sense. This was just like they were just making a meme of this Trump would save the squirrel. This won't happen under Trump. And it's like it was tongue in cheek, but it was just like, I mean, but like, you know what those weird online people are like.
Wait a minute, aren't we online? Aren't we weird online people?
Kind of, yeah, but we're not regulars on 4chan, at least as far as I know. they had this faux animal rights thing with Donald Trump, and then Donald Trump elects Kirsty Noem to, I think it's a cabinet position, or at least like a relatively high White House role, and she's the one that killed the dog that she didn't like. Which I know you're going to be okay with, Drew, but I mean, me and Amy,
he probably ate it.
As long as it didn't go to waste.
Mm. And also, one thing about Trump, he's basically the only president that didn't have a dog at the White House.
Mm. So. Didn't the Clintons, like, just when they left the White House, they just gave their dogs to an animal sanctuary or something? Like, the dogs were just televisual dogs, and as soon as they... I swear that was the Clintons who did that.
I mean, it sounds very Clinton.
It does sound very Clinton, yeah.
Sounds like politicians, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Clinton's are the archetype of politician, aren't they, really?
Anyway, so we learned that Fred...
Yeah.
Not
that was it. Yeah. Fred's... Yeah.
Yeah. See,
and then somebody mentioned Jamie Lannister, and then that... happened.
So this is kind of interesting that he didn't know, which is that raises some questions, but also because the thing is, it's like I don't necessarily mind that he did something. Well, I do mind that he did something really bad, but it's more about how he is now and how he got there, right? It's like, it's to me, you know, it's the idea of redeemability. It's the idea of like moving on after you've done something really bad and how much bad stuff you've done in the past sort of defines him as a person, all that kind of stuff. And in war, obviously, there's a lot of cross communication, there's a lot of misinformation, there's a lot of, you know, things that aren't said to people that should be said, and vice versa, right? It's a chaotic environment. So I suppose it sort of raises the question, even if you didn't know, when you're asked to blow up a station full of people who are...
I think it's at least implied that he didn't know they were civilians either. I think he was told
they were terrorists, yeah.
Yeah.
So he was told it was a terrorist takeover.
But the takeaway from that should be, and I think this is what you're saying, on Fred's part, the takeaway from that should be the military is bad. And I think like me not knowing is not really an excuse, because I was part of this machine that has this, that is designed to do this.
Yeah.
So I think the implication is, yeah, he realized that he was part of something corrupt and left.
But that's very much a coming to terms with your part as being part of a larger thing. So like, for example, the United Kingdom done some pretty heinous stuff even within our lifetime. How much are we party to that, shall we say, as voters?
Well, I mean, every time we buy cheap clothing that's made, we know it's made in a sweat factory. We're kind of trapped by the system. You know, poor people can't afford, you know, the handmade, you know, blah blah blah. It's, yeah, but we should, this culpability in there, yeah, for sure.
Well, it's not a black or white kind of issue, really. You could. But like, buying less from sweatshops is better than buying more from sweatshops, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if for example you need a particular, like maybe you've got particular feet and you can really only shoes are important, they're very personal. You know, only certain types of shoes really work for you. And if those shoes happen to be like Nikes or something, which of course they're made in a sweatshop, then you know, you kind of have to make that deal with the universe, right? Of look, I know these shoes come from bad places, but Drew's duplicated. I know these shoes come from bad places, but like my options are outright limited. But whereas, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be full throated. Everything you buy is Nike. Then
I think you can over focus on consumer choices because we're trained to believe that our only, you know, our consumer choices, you know, define us as people, and our choice of consumer products is like a political act to an extent, which of course it isn't. What we've got to do is change the system that forces us into this position. Still accept your culpability. Yeah, we're aiding the system by engaging with it, but without systemic change, there's not a ton we can do about it.
Okay, one second.
Need you to flip around again. Don't want Drew getting upset that we've hijacked Bobby from him. There we go. Back to normal.
That's kind of the complexity of it, because obviously, like, the people out of all the decision making positions, you know, we are pretty low down in the pecking order of how the country is run. But that being said, we're not powerless, right? You know, we've got some things that we can do. Like, that's not to say that every single person who is powerless is of equal harm. Well,
our power is in our collective action, and that's something we've been trained not to understand. I don't think there's power in individual action, even coordinated individual action.
I don't know. There are definitely things that coordinated individual action has improved. Whether or not it's moved the needle from, you know, as much as you'd like, but it's definitely, various like political movements or boycott campaigns or things like that. Now, sorry.
Go on.
Okay, I mean, admittedly, 99% of boycotts don't end up working, but in the times they do,
in both here and in the US, the majority of the population doesn't want us to be supplying weapons to Israel. Doesn't matter.
No, that doesn't matter. But there are things you can do, right, that do matter.
Don't know. Join a union and join a mass political movement. Yes. Anything else? I don't think so. No.
And none of the mass political movements are on the side of humanity, basically.
Yeah, not right now.
They're on the side of capital.
You know, the anti-Gaza war protests, you know, all the universities protesting. Like, I'm not saying they shouldn't do it. It's an important statement. Like, it helps people understand, you know, what's going on.
Well, there we go. See, that's
kind of... It doesn't directly, you know, it's not going to, you know, they just send the police in and they stomp on the heads of these fucking kids.
Yeah.
These kids and carry on as normal, you know. And then vilify them in the press. Like, same as, you know, all the climate protests, like the vilifying them, you know, throwing paint on or throwing soup on a painting and blocking roads and stuff, and they're made out to be the bad ones. It's insane.
Yeah, there was quite an interesting thing about that. You know, when they had the floods in Spain, there was somebody saying, look at all these protesters clogging up the streets. We need to do something about them, you know, sort of a satire thing. But, yeah, I mean, Greta Thunberg, look at how she was treated in the press and... But a few years ago, to how she is now, you know, now she's a bad, now she's a baddie, you know.
Well, she's threat to capital now because it flipped when she started being critical of.
She was from the very thing that I saw when she gave that speech at the UN, like, you should be fucking ashamed. When she started giving that speech, like, they were laughing, they were going like, yeah, you know, it's awful. But then then she's fucking angry.
Yeah, and they were quite rightly.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, yeah.
Anything from this episode we haven't talked about yet?
well, we've just been on the Brian Johnson train. Right, so let's go to the bit where they breached
Fred Flintstone.
Fred Flintstone, okay, Brian Flintstone. So they make it in. We've talked about how
Diogo.
He gets knocked down, and so they basically hit. Apart from, so I don't entirely know who the people they're shooting at are initially.
It's the security force. There's a sort of token security force, but Miller points something out that's important to this, and it will probably become more apparent later. Think about how they reacted when they were disconnected from the computer system. Mm-hmm. And what Miller said a few minutes before that was like the jail rounds. It's like a prison guard.
Oh right, yeah. So they're prisoners.
I mean,
not necessarily, but they can react. We saw them react violently.
We saw how they react. Yeah.
So it's just they don't want to kill them because they're using. You know, they're
being used for something. So,
they want to control them.
You might find more about that as we go.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is a cinematic thing, but they take their helmets off pretty early on.
Well, she did say they could, but probably best not to. But since they just had people come at them without helmets.
I think because it's Miller that takes his hat off first. And I think that's just Miller's not used to wearing a helmet.
Yeah, Miller just gets impatient with it. Yeah. And obviously has to take Diogo's off to see that his head's still there.
Yeah. Well, Diego's got a gunk on the front. That makes sense for him. I didn't know if it was like cinematic purposes or anything like that.
Probably a bit of both.
They want us to see the faces when they're talking, and yeah, there's a little bit of that, I think. Yeah.
But yeah,
it kind of makes sense.
So let's review for what happened there. So we've got these bunch of scientists, or we assume they're scientists, plugged into some sort of VR, AR type processing system. Miller knocks it offline, and they all go bananas. And then the undisciplined force shoot everybody except one of them. So, you know, we now know this.
Miller actually protects with his body.
He stands in front of him. He goes, like, you know, and then he says to somebody, look, take this guy, nothing happens to him. So Miller knows they want the scientists. And then we get to the sort of Holden and Fred get on the station as well once it's taken. And then we get to the then we get to the big reveal about what's going on, really.
Yeah.
Which is sort of confirming or clarifying a lot of details from the end of the first series.
Yeah. This is another thing that you see in Deus Ex towards the end of the third game, where there are people that are also plugged into a machine. And they're like, their brain has been turned into like a CPU or CPUs. But I'm guessing that's not what's happening here, but it looks like aesthetically, it looks kind of similar.
Lines, yeah.
Because they're like, are they being used as human proxies or something? Are their bodies being operated from? Well, we're going to find out. Presumably, no,
I don't think it's a spoiler to say they are. There's more going on, which I won't talk about. Yeah. But like, just a shit ton of information, and they're being used to process.
Yeah, they're just helping to process all the information coming from Eros.
All the data. So Dresden's in the next room, and he's just going, okay, this is a bit of data. Someone else process this. This is a bit of data.
Yeah. Or he's getting the results, and one or the other. Yeah.
Collating them. Yeah. Okay. So he's, it's just human processing, as it were. And then so Dresden's talking about how, so this is, you know, he confirms extrasolar object, discovered, is it a weapon? Is it learning? Can we use it as a...
Well, Dresden seems to think it's a weapon that's been fired at Earth.
One of the important lines there is, I can't remember if it's Miller or Holden, but they say you could have just fed it bacteria.
Yeah, Holden said, Miller says that, yeah.
Dresden says, I'm not interested in the cosmic fate of bacteria.
Yeah. So he thinks he's got a higher purpose, basically, and it makes everything valid. He just basically spends all that time trying to justify himself.
Yeah. And I mean, I get it. You know, you've discovered the first extra solar object. If it is indeed an extra solar, I'm assuming we've got no reason to believe otherwise. But
yeah.
The information we've got is
because the thing is, it's like, I mean, I don't know how much you were leading me down the wrong path or whether or not it was just me interpreting it, but I was really not expecting it to be aliens.
I think both I and Hamish, we were trying to subtly push you away from that so you'd have the surprise.
We didn't want to go, it's aliens, and you go, oh, well, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah, the protomolecule is what it is.
Very adamantly, it's a bioweapon. Yeah.
Because that's what everybody else believed up until the end of the series, first series. But even into that, in fact.
So it responds to it like information and feeding it. They want to see what happens when they feed it lots of humans.
Well, he says it can take things and repurpose them. He says that.
Mm.
So I see, I'm trying to work out now whether or not we're going to see a return of Julie Mao or Adam Jensen or people.
Kenzo.
Every time Kenzo. You say it, I glance at Hamish's face to see his reaction.
Adam Kenzo. Is it like, are we going to see them back? Maybe not necessarily as themselves, but as a repurposed version or something like that. Who knows? But, who knows? And I know you're not going to tell me, and I don't want to put you in a position where you have to poke a face, you know, like I'm excited to learn. But Miller just shoots Dresden. I was not expecting that one.
This is what
when I was talking about the Manhattan Project stuff, I think in the last episode, this is what I was alluding to. I'm 100 in the next episode, I think Miller will just say a one line thing which is his justification for why he did it, which is a good line.
He does say something in the next episode. He explains himself.
Miller is right. This man is, it's like that. I should have been somebody like that. And the scientists should refuse to do this kind of work. And honestly, I think the Manhattan Project, which is just straight up a weapon, is a more clear cut.
Well, and an experiment. I mean, they wanted to see what happened. They went in afterwards to see what happened. What was the effect on humans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but also, I mean,
and that's why they did a second one as well.
But testing two different designs as well.
Yeah, but also, I mean, I don't want to defend the Manhattan people, but Holocaust aside, the thing is it's like, first of all, I've always got to have a little bit of sympathy for people that are swimming in propaganda, right? Like, it does affect you, right? Like, okay, people might cut me down for this one, but like, you know, like people in Israel, right? They are swimming in a particular type of propaganda. There are people that are, you know, that we know that are good people that might, but that are, you know, on the issue of Gaza, you can see where they have you can see where their information's come from, and
no, I agree with you, and it, you know,
and so with the Manhattan Project, like, they would have had that same Cold War kind of Cold War propaganda or even anti-China propaganda, or you know, like,
you know, their thinking was, yes, it's a terrible weapon, but it will end the war. But these very fucking intelligent people who should know that, like, capital will find a fucking excuse to use this, like,
a lot of them were trying to get them to do a test and reveal, they wanted to reveal the test to the world to show what they had.
But also,
so I would have some sympathy, you know, somebody living in Israel, working class, heavily propagandized, joins the IDF, believes all that stuff. That's fine. Not fine, but I have some
sympathy. That's national service for them. So,
but, you know, when you're designing a weapon that can literally wipe out humanity, then there's a higher level of expected, you know, critique of what you're fucking doing. And scientists should just refuse to make fucking weapons.
But what if
they'll never be used for good? They'll never be used.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a good. You know,
a weapon that only gets the bad guys.
Well, it's like all this stuff about surgical strikes and everything. It's bollocks. There's always collateral damage. I.e. thousands of children being killed to try and track down one supposed bad guy.
Every scientist involved in that project, they are some of the greatest monsters in human history.
They were, and again, maybe I'm being a bit charitable to them, but if they were thinking that the Soviets were doing the same thing...
I don't care. You can't justify an atrocity by another, especially a potential atrocity.
But is it not more dangerous to have a monopoly on atrocities?
I would say the same about the Russian side. Like, it's on the scientists. Scientists should refuse to do work that is anti.
Hang on a minute. You're talking about individual action now, aren't you? You've turned about.
But that's different. Being one of those scientists and being a pleb here are two different things.
We all have decisions that we make in life, though, don't we?
Yeah, those decisions are a little bit more far-reaching than, you know, us not buying a certain pair of chinners. You know?
I've made decisions that could potentially wipe out humanity. Then I would think about them very hard.
Yes.
I mean,
the fucking what's his name? The one the film was made about.
Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer. That when he quotes the Hindu text, I can't remember.
Bhagavad Gita.
I'm death, the destroyer of worlds. Oh my god, so fucking emo. Shut the fuck up, you mass murdering cunt.
I mean, I think Christopher Nolan was a little bit blamed for that, to be honest.
He's
the director of the film.
Was said by Oppenheimer.
It was. I mean, it was said, but he had GD'd that up.
Like, you know, absolute twat.
Yeah, I mean, what if Oppenheimer resigned and then someone else filled his place and the same thing happened?
That's not the point for me. Is I believe, like, science, anybody but scientists, because they're in that position, have a moral fucking obligation to just not do that.
It's like people that work in an arms factory. You know, they must have a complete disconnect if they think that them putting, you know, two widgets together on a bomb is not going to cause, you know, is not helping that bomb to kill children, you know, or the IT guy, you know. It's like people have said to me, you know, there's jobs I've refused to take because of where they, you know, what they're connected with, and people say, oh, well, if it was enough money, it's like, No, there isn't enough money to do something evil. Right. It's like, you know, couldn't pay me to work for Microsoft. Or, you know, you couldn't pay me enough money. There's nothing, you know.
Just a quick side to the Deus Ex thing is, like, with the Sam Carter argument, you know, the quartermaster, he says that he stuck it out in UNATCO for as long as he could because he feels that things are only going to get better if the good guys stay.
That was his rationale,
but I think he went back on that towards the end. Well, I don't know if he went back on it because they kind of turfed him out, or if he knew it was
realized that was folly.
Well, anyway, that, sorry, I didn't want to say
we're going to change the Gestapo from the inside.
Excuse me. I mean, to be honest, when it comes to a resistance of any kind, you want people in wherever you can get them, right? Although sabotage is different than
You know. I mean, if it was a spy in the Manhattan Project that was sabotaging their progress at every turn, I'd be like, that's a fucking hero to humanity. Yeah.
And then there's the other one, the one that gave the Russians all the information.
And again, that was heroic, I think, because that kept the balance. Like, if only America, like, nobody should have those weapons, but only America having them is the worst possible fucking scenario. Yeah.
Oh, they'd have used them more. They'd have just kept using them.
But then again,
and it was Britain that gave them a lot of the information as well. And then they cut Britain off from it.
Yep.
It's like, does nobody ever pay attention to what American power does?
Yeah. Well, I think people feel powerless to it, if you know.
Yeah, but the politicians aren't.
I think they do.
Like the United Kingdom, I think they'd rather be a mistreated friend than an enemy, or mistreated, you know, friend.
They'd rather be lacking along behind the bully than being the target.
I mean, the reason, like, you know, like, America has military bases in a lot of countries, right? 800 or something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, most countries will have like 3, you know.
The UK's got a relatively high, but yeah, I mean, you see comparisons with China all the time. Like, America's got 8, it depends what you count as a military, because they've got a lot of black sites and a lot of like places, but yeah, I can't remember the number, but hundreds. And I think China's got 2.
Yeah. And the thing is that it's obviously a diplomatic tool. I don't know even if you call it soft power or hard power at this stage, because it's kind of a bit of both.
Yeah.
But it's but like, you know, they put a base in another country because the other country accept it, because it's like, well, you're not going to mess with us because America have a base here, and then
but
they
makes
have
them a target as well, though.
I mean, that's the whole fucking Cuban. We're getting a bit astray, so I'll be very quick. The whole Cuban Missile Crisis, like, the US they got nuclear missiles in Turkey, Germany, you know, surrounding the Russia, basically, nuclear missiles on the border of Russia in every fucking direction. And then the degree to which America shat itself when there were nuclear weapons on Cuba, like, it's so fucking hypocritical. It's so one side. Like, we can do whatever the fuck we want, and if you try and do the same thing back to us, we're gonna then we're gonna panic and upset the fucking power balance in the entire world. It's psychotic.
Anyway, so Miller shoots.
I mean, I don't know. Like, that's the thing. I don't, because the thing is, what if it is a weapon, and what if you need a vaccine? And maybe Dresden's not.
Yeah,
the
but
guy
he wasn't
to do
willing
it.
To.
Yeah, the dude says he's in the vaccine.
That's against everything that they're doing. He says he outright. He basically gives Miller the excuses.
And I mean, he's.
Like, he doesn't shoot. Like, he lets him talk. He doesn't shoot him. It's when Fred Johnson steps to him and says, okay, what do you need? Like, it's when Fred Johnson's, like, about to make a deal with him, that's when Miller shoots him.
Yeah.
See, I think I'm on Fred Johnson's side on this one, because the deal that he could make, like, as in names, he could blow open Jules-Pierre Mao's
operation. No, but Dresden is clearly saying, what are you going to give me to let me
to continue? To let me keep going, yeah.
Yeah.
And Fred Johnson's, you know, they're meeting on that, and Miller's like, fuck that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a
I mean, it's
start,
obvious,
right?
This is obviously going to come to other things in the next episode.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, like, obviously, I don't know what they, I know more than what they know, I suppose, because of the story and how it's being told.
Yeah.
Right? But I know more than Miller from Miller's point of view, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But because there's so much, so many information holes that would be benefit, like, Dresden has a lot of information that's really fucking useful. So, like, working out the conspiracy.
I'm not even saying that, like, this, you know, the proton molecule exists. It should be researched. But his interest is clearly, he is inhuman.
Oh, no, I'm saying take him off the project. Take him off the project, yeah. I'm just saying, like, interrogate
get
him,
the information
him, like,
first.
Yeah, you know, it's ask questions, then shoot. Now, I get personal. Obviously, with Miller, there's a personal stuff there. Like, as far as Miller's concerned, Dresden killed Julie Mao, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely his big issue with it. Yeah,
yeah. And I mean, that's at least a felony murder, if not manslaughter, right? So, yeah, like I totally, you know, like, and also, like, to be fair to Dresden, he wasn't like weaseling his way out of that. He's like, look, I'm here, I'm doing this.
No, he's got no shame, right?
Yeah, that's the problem. He had absolutely no shame about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So
it was it wasn't weaselly, but it was just trying to justify himself, though, you know, talking about the comparison with Genghis Khan and all that stuff.
Which is also
the idea that Genghis Khan killed a quarter of humanity at that time, completely pulled out of thin air. There's no basis for that.
I haven't finished that video, but I loved the this guy's. Yeah, like it's like I loved, like, I don't know how the guy presents it as, like, I don't think I'm going to do another Genghis Khan Day video because of all the outrage from it.
It's, yeah, like, yeah.
Because he is
honest on YouTube, makes very good videos.
Does he embroil himself? Is this a legitimate controversy where he sort of stands up for Genghis Khan and it gets lambasted for it or something?
Kind of, and I think part of his argument was that people just see the title and ends up happening is people compare modern daily, like, oh, not that bad, Genghis Khan, you know, like, which is,
yeah,
want that. There's nuance to it. There's different things that he doesn't want. He just feels like it's important.
Yeah. If you ever look at the Mongolian Empire on a map, it is fucking massive. Like, it's crazy big. I mean, his armies were known for, of course, archers on horseback, which is kind of fucking unstoppable if you think about it.
Yeah, like, when you see, like, videos of those Mongolian archers, like, doing all, like, just firing from, like, you know, doing all that, like, tricks, being on the horse sideways and still shooting targets and stuff, fucking amazing.
And also apparently, but I'm not super confident in my Mongolian sort of history, is apparently one of the secrets to success was religious tolerance. So they'd take over, like, villages and stuff, and they'd be like, you carry on with the stuff that you're doing.
He does mention about bathing. The Mongols didn't, they had a taboo against bathing in rivers, so if they ever caught anybody bathing in rivers, they just kill them.
What was the taboo? Was it just unclean?
Just cultural taboo. It was just something that, yeah, if you do that, you're evil, so we kill you.
So do they have indoor baths or something? I
guess, yeah. I know you didn't go into detail, but yeah.
Didn't know that.
The Mongols also had heavy cavalry. It wasn't just horse arms. They had heavy cavalry and infantry. It was combined arms, same as Alexander.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, to be honest, like, with a kingdom the size of Mongolia... Was Mongolia a kingdom? Empire? It was big enough that there's very few generalizations you can make. It's like when people make generalizations about China. It's like, that's like a 1.3 billion people country. Like, there is very few things you can say about 1.3 or so billion people that rings true, right? Like,
tough to make a generalization on a sample that size.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's like you might as well at that point just be saying humans.
It's the population or something.
All those humans are at it again. So I'm supposed to be against the Chinese in this one, aren't I?
Also, we're just rabbiting on without any more expanse stuff. So I think we're probably done. Is there any details you want to pick up? And I think I've picked up all my little details I wanted, really. Kamina Drummer, the guy from the second pod, the point about the reason for the gel guns. Yeah,
This is another build up-y episode, and I will say, like, the next couple of episodes. Fucking love them.
I preferred this over episode one. Episode one felt very setty uppy.
It's quite interestingly setty uppy and actiony all at once, though, isn't it? Because they've got the attack on
and this is part of the point. Like, the action is anticlimactic. They're ready to go in, guns blazing, to take the station over, and then it's like, oh, we've got it already.
I mean, I thought this was quite an actiony episode. Like, this is Game of Thrones had a couple of episode twos that were like this, and I think in some ways they are the strongest episodes in the way that you've got the setup from episode one, and then it launches into a mini climax before
the show does that a lot. It had sort of a, like, a mid-season climax and then the end of season sometimes the end of season isn't really a climax in the same way, which is interesting. No, but no, mid season two, you're going to enjoy, guaranteed.
I think, yeah, I think so. I'm
just thinking how crazy it is. We're still only on series two, and there's so many things. There's things that happen, and I'm thinking, oh my god, we haven't even got near that yet, and stuff.
Yeah.
We haven't spoken about Avicerella, entirely. I think
we only mentioned the thing about Fred Johnson, but yeah, Avicerella and Southers. Meeting ends, and then Coy. Oh, I forgot his name.
Spy.
Pardon? Spy.
Spy.
Spy. So the good general, admiral. Sorry, he stands down because he doesn't want the escalation.
Yeah.
Which you do see from time, like, you know, I think I mentioned in previous episodes where it's, you know, Cotillard. It is often
Cotillard Ghazi.
The generals are often the ones that advocate for measured responses.
We've talked about that a few times, haven't we? Yeah,
and this is again a case where Avicerella kind of already, again, this kind of ties into that same kind of morality of should you walk away, because Avicerella doesn't.
And Southern does, yeah. But Southern gets reassigned. He doesn't resign from the Navy. He only resigns from the
position. His position. Yeah.
And he gets assigned to an actual battleship, basically.
I mean, Avicerella makes that point. He's walking away from having influence, and she makes that point to him, yeah. But I think it's only valuable to be in a position where you have influence if you don't believe in what's happening and you're willing to do anything to change it.
I think
like, I'll do my job, and like, just because I'm a good person, things will change.
Mm. Mm. So also, Avicerella sends Ehrenreich the actual. She puts the idea in Ehrenreich's head, so she doesn't bring it up. She gives it to him to bring up, but then maybe that's her pretending to be the good, you know, sidekick. Yeah.
Well, she doesn't. You don't go over the chain, do you?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's her pretending to be the good sidekick.
She shouldn't get straight to man.
In that context, she could have put that forward as a target, but she's giving it to him, I think, to keep him on side.
Yeah, yeah. Because remember, she's still trying to. Yeah, she's still trying to not let him know that she's against him now, basically. And I think
because it's the smallest target they would have accepted as an escalation. Like,
yeah, I think she's right in a way. Unfortunately, it's not a really good, you know. But and it's all, oh well, it's only 15 people, what have you. It's only, you know, tell 15 families that, you know.
Yeah,
but
I mean, there's a lot of this, isn't there? Of like acceptable losses and
well, that's a military a political thing, actually, not the military thing, but the political thing is like, oh well, it's numbers.
Hmm. Yeah, Mann doesn't seem to be particularly like. I know he's like listening to all this advice and working on it, but he seems to be doing what he's told. He doesn't seem to be much of an independent.
Who are you talking about?
The CEO of Earth, Mann.
Oh right, yeah. Oh no, you'll get more later, but it's already, I think, kind of implied. Like, he's not the brightest. He's somebody who's failed upwards.
Yeah.
Well, I
think it's Ehrenreich and Avicerella that are known to be running the show in all circles, you know.
Yeah, but then I think we should be, as a society, more aware of the fact that our leaders, particularly ones that win from elections, are there because they won an election, because they are, you know, good at rallying the troops, good at generating the influence and votes, and then they pick their cabinet to do the heavy lifting, right? Like, I think it should be like, Donald Trump is not, like, he's very good at winning elections. He's won two of them independently, which is something you can't say about a lot of politicians, right? But
it's building a cult, isn't it? That's what it is.
But that's what I mean. A good leader, an effective leader,
then they're playing the game well. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the one thing that Donald Trump is better at than almost anyone else in the world is getting attention, grabbing attention. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that mean he's good at politicians stuff? Does it mean he's good at diplomacy, international relations? No, of course not. It has the two things are two completely different skill sets. But for some reason, we consider them inherently linked in our democracy, which is kind of strange, really, isn't it? That the most popular...
So I think that's particularly in America, the president isn't expected to actually run policy. And when you get presidents that do try to run policy out of the White House, you know, bypassing the State Department and all of that, JFK and Nixon, then they don't last long.
I mean, and also with Trump.
But JFK was killed by a random lone gunman.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And Nixon made a very bungled burglary.
Yeah.
Well, with Reagan, I've told you about this. The guy that shot Reagan makes YouTube videos now.
Yeah, I keep meaning to have a look at that. Yeah.
He did it because he was in love with, I forgot her name now, the actress.
Oh, God, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Okay, I can't remember either, but yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's annoying.
But yeah, no, he served his, 30 years in prison, and he's out making country songs on YouTube. Story of rehabilitation is kind of endearing, if you think about it.
I don't know. Shooting Reagan isn't something you necessarily need rehabilitating from.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was more the other stuff.
Yeah.
The obsessor.
Jodie Foster, that's it.
That's the one, yeah.
I can't remember her name.
Yeah, that was the stuff that you needed rehabilitating for, you know.
I mean, he's barking up the wrong tree there, I think.
Sorry?
He's barking up the wrong tree there.
Well, she was basically a child at the time as well.
Oh, doubly something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So anyway, yeah, the big question about that is like, yeah, do you stay and sabotage? Because the thing is, the general guy, like he is probably Admiral. Not a politician. Admiral guy, is he? Like, he's not. What's his name? It's not his badge. Souther. He's not a crafty politician like Avasarela.
No,
he's a forthright.
He's pretty
chap.
Straightforward. Yeah,
he can't. He probably knows he can't.
His problem is he still believes in that he's working for an inherently good organization. So I think his influence would be of limited use. But if he teamed up with Avasarela, then maybe. But yeah.
Yeah. What Avasarela wanted to put forward was what's going to happen, basically.
Yeah.
That's the one important thing to take from this, if nothing else. Everything else around that table was all theatre to Avasarela's plan.
Yeah.
Or decision that she'd already made, basically, because she weighed it up in that sort of what would be acceptable to these people kind of way, and gave it to
Emery. You know this, and you're saying this, but she's also playing the dual role thing. She's trying to convince them she's one thing, where actively she's working against Erin Wright and. Sort of trying to figure out Fred Johnson and whether he's somebody she can work with.
Well, and then that's what brings up Cotillard and her talking about the communicating with Fred under the table sort of thing.
I like that. They avert a cliche there where he goes where Spy goes that's treason, and she doesn't go like only if I get caught or whatever. She just goes, yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's So, yeah, great. I can finally move on to the next episode. I was looking forward to this one because it's been a while. Like, it's been a while since we last did a space.
Photo, well, we did quite a few, spaced closer together. So, yeah.
The next few episodes are in for a treat.
Yeah, it's some good stuff coming.
So, it's still going one by one, right? I don't get to skip ahead a few.
No. I think it's best we do this because we can do them fairly regularly.
Yeah. So
it's not like you're just watching someone talking about 5 minutes. We're doing like a proper breakdown. That's the word I was looking for.
Breakdown.
Yeah. So I think it's worth doing it one at a time because you're going to get if you start doing like two at a time, you're going to start missing things out, or you're going to have a longer episode of this or whatever. You know, I think it's better to stick with what we've got.
It's not like we're lacking. You know, it's not like we're sitting there going, "What can we talk about?"
Yeah. It's not like anyone's shut up since the beginning. Right.
Yeah. Cool. All right, should we wrap it up there?
Okay, well, thank you very much. Don't forget to put your comments in the video below and whatever else people say on these things.
Which faction leader would you be?
Yeah, that's a good question. Which faction leader would you be?
I don't know. What am I doing this? Like Family Fortunes or something?
Yeah.